Okay, so we're sitting down here on the waterfront in Geneva. It's a lovely sunny day, and I'm here with Pastor Nick Macharia from Nairobi, who works with the Tenderfeet Project in the slums in Kibera, which is one of the largest slum areas in all of Africa, with over 1 million people living in really, really dire conditions. So, first of all, could you just tell us a little bit about the actual project Tenderfeet? What exactly is it?
Tenderfeet is a project which was born out of great desperacy and problems when we started going to the prison, and also discovered that children are jailed together with their parents in prison. And the Tenderfeet idea came in response to the need of those children to give them a settlement and to give them education, because in prisons they don't have chances of getting the education, they don't have chances of growing in a parental, you know, situation. And therefore Tenderfeet was born as a vision to snatch out most of those children and to give them a hope through a home rehabilitation where they can get parental guidance and love.
And it grew from that idea, and it was difficult to make it happen, but it grew from the idea to the reality, which is now a school in Kibera with Mama Margaret.
At present, when I went there in the slum, I found Mama Margaret. And Mama Margaret was employed by a church organization to teach as an untrained teacher for about 3,000 Kenya shillings. And I sold the idea to her, and I told her we can become more meaningful by assisting very desperate children. And she bought the idea, and sometimes later she got problem with her job, and she tendered her resignation, and then it was quite a problem to get started. But I encouraged her, together with the husband, to get some few children in her little house of maybe 12 feet by 12 feet, and then babysit them and try to teach them and what have you. And that is how the school began. It began with very little, about seven children, and Mama Margaret there, and she could give what she knew about teaching the children, but she did not have the proper, you know, the proper education and the proper papers that will entail her to handle children, child care. So she started, and later on the children start coming, because we said maybe we can start with buying some biscuits and enticing them to come, and we discovered that they started coming because they knew that we are giving out biscuits and what have you. And then thereafter we started targeting the parents of those children who are there, who are not in prison and who are not dead. But to our dismay, we discovered that most of the children were orphans, and some of the parents we could contact, they were mothers in the street, they have got no regards for their children and what have you. And then the burden became quite elaborate, and there I decided to create an awareness. We call it church awareness program. And I went into the radio and TV in our country to speak about the plight of the children. And now several Kenyan people started coming in, chipping, giving some food. Some would give some money token and what have you. And the burden outgrew, the need outgrew the, you know, the resources all the time. That's how it now turned to be what it is today, with 137 children.
Okay, and just to explain a little bit more about Kibera and the kind of situation that these children are coming in. Like, there's huge levels of crime, and you were saying 90% of the inmates in prison are from Kibera. So, unless things change in that situation? Like, there's not really much future for these children, is there?
Kibera is quite horrible. I don't know. I don't believe that anybody would like to work there. Many religion have gone there, and after seeing the problem, they have chosen to relocate, to go somewhere else, whereby they can get some people who can be potential. And Kibera is quite horrible because it is the second biggest slum in Africa. We come from Soweto and then we come to Kibera, whereby we have got 1 million plus people living there, where there is no electricity, there is no water, there is no human amenities, things that human basic needs to for survival, they are not there. And you find that because many people immigrated from the countryside and they came to Kibera. They cannot be able to go back to where they came from because there's a money situation. And Kibera now, having the fact that it is much closer to town than any other area, because they can always walk to town to beg there or to commit crime, and then they come and hide in Kibera. So you find that because of this poverty aspect, there are very many organized crimes in Kibera, and the government does not do much about it. Maybe even when you put a lot of police, nothing much happens, because if the poverty situation is not addressed, then the security will become a hassle all the way through. So it is a situation whereby it is so pathetic, and I don't know eventually what will happen, but for us and the Tenderfeet project, we said let's start and do what we can. If we can be able to help 10 children, we shall be proud. We shall say our goal have been achieved. Yeah. But having 100 children does not mean that we have, we have solved the problem in Kibera. But we want to give the little we have. We want to give our know-how. We want to give our potential to the eradication of the sufferings that people do undergo. The aid epidemic is quite, quite elaborate there. And we find that most of our children need some antiretroviral drugs, which they take weekly. And
to help stop the body system,
okay. Because they were born with AIDS, and for a long time. It used to be very expensive to have those drugs. One dose for 1 month was costing about 10,000 in our country. But very recently, the government was forced by the international community to offer free of charge these drugs.
Excellent.
And now the children can come there, and together with the they need to take these drugs alongside with the food.
Yeah.
So we are only able to provide a breakfast, not very rich one, and then lunch. But supper, they have to go back into the street and find how to survive.
Yeah.
So it is quite pathetic, Duncan. Yeah. Yeah.
And could you just describe a little bit about the actual, like, for people who haven't seen Kibera or seen the film that Lahash made about it, could you just try to describe what, like, just the simple things that we take for granted in life here in Genoa or in the Western world, the simple things of, finding food, eating, washing, going to the toilet, having access to water to drink, those sort of things. Could you just describe how those things happen in Kibera?
Well, life here is quite luxury. I'm scared of civilization in this part of the world. And the best thing is people to come, because even the Lahash people, when they came and they found the situation, they decided to take that film. That film does not explain everything, because it shows the houses from the top, but not what is inside those houses.
Yeah.
But once you go and start living with those families and you find their predicament and troubles and what have you, you get a scenario, you get the whole idea of how the problem is. And I think that people have come not to, you know, the love of humanity have grown cold, because I don't see the reason why many people should have so much even to waste. Because like in the third world, Africa, Kenya, we depend on what is drawn away from Britain, like second-hand clothes and what have you. All of them, these are the things that are making our economy to grow, as opposed to coming and helping us to develop our industries. Yeah. They make a situation whereby we shall always get what they don't need.
Yeah.
And I think this is why I'm saying the love of many is growing cold, as the Bible says that in the last days the love of many will grow cold and there will be excessive lawlessness. And I think if there are people of goodwill in this world, which I believe they are, what they need is to get a first-hand experience, to come and see, and also to learn from those people who are in those situations. Because maybe I'm a better off pastor who can be able to travel to Europe, whereas there are other pastors like me working in the slum who cannot and do not ever dream of traveling. And there is no situation like this where an interview will ever be done to them, but they do quite a big job. Oh, yeah. And they commit themselves to this. I think if the world have got some little love left, it's time to come over to situations that are so raw and try to lift them up. Yeah. Like Kibera being one of them.
Okay. And could you just describe, like, because for people who haven't seen the film, the Lahash film, and just to explain, Lahash is a grassroots group that work in Africa, and they came to Nairobi and came to Kibera, and they were shocked by what they saw, and they made a short, about a 4 or 5 minute film, which just describes what some of the aspects of what life is like there. But in it, they just pointed out how, you know, for an area with over 1 million people living, there's only 3 schools, 3 state schools. Mm. There's 5 toilets. You have
for 5,000 people,
and you have to pay to go to those toilets.
Yeah.
There's only 4 or 5 water pumps. There's no access to running water. There's only 4 or 5 pumps, and you have to pay to get to use those pumps.
Yeah.
So the result is that people don't have access to clean water. That they're drinking from dirty water, which is full of typhoid, diphtheria, other diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Without having toilets that they can, you know, to take away the human excrement, and they've got the fling toilets, where they go to the toilet in a bag, and they close up the bag and they just throw it in the street.
Yeah, we call them frying toilets in Kibera. You see, the situation is quite horrible, and many children don't make it in life because of those early problems that their health could not cope up with. And some times ago, the government used to give free medical services to children between the age of 0 to 5 years, and this time they have withdrawn. And you find that many children are not taken to hospital. I've got so many cases of very sick children who cannot be taken to hospital because their mothers don't have money. And some times ago, when the government was giving hospital facilities, these children can be dumped in hospital and the mother would leave.
Yeah.
Because if you sleep there, you are also supposed to pay, whether you sleep on a bed or you don't. And these people don't have money. But now, when we have this situation whereby there is no toilet, because when I say there is no toilet, the available one are for sale. And many of those people, 90% of those people cannot afford even to pay for their services of those toilets, even bathroom. Going to the bathroom, you have to pay some money. And because of all this, you find that people are neglected. People are forced to live like wild animals. And they don't care. They don't care, and the health issue is not a priority to them. And the kind of food that now they eat, they scavenge for food in the dustbin and what have you. I think it's quite terrible. It's quite terrible, and I don't know, but it's quite terrible. So Rahash, they are committed. They are working in Sudan. But when on their way they passed Kibera, and that's how they met Mama Margaret there. And they were good people. They said, though we don't have money, and not only that, but about 2 times they have paid for our rent, because we have rented shelters there for those children. And they said what we can do is we can come and have some video clips and take you to the world, so that the world can decide what to do with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm very grateful for Dan and his team, because they wish us well. Yeah, they have a lot of love, and they meant well. I believe they meant well.
Yeah. And I suppose getting the message out is one thing, but then what can be done, like, you know, by trying to, I suppose, tap into some of the different funds that are there. Like, there's a lot of aid work, there's a lot of aid groups around the world that are, you know, they're doing a lot of money, and there's a lot of people in the Western world who realize that they're in a better position than their fellow brothers and sisters in Africa and places, and that they are giving money over. And there's, like, in Ireland there's many groups, Concern and Trocra and things like that, and many others in the rest of the Western world. But that's one aspect of it. But could you just tell us a little bit then about your own personal life, and in terms of a typical day for Pastor Nick? Like, what you were saying earlier on about the animals and the things that you're doing to try to help this project.
Well, before I say that, I would say one of the greatest blockage to AIDS in Africa is bureaucracy. Bureaucracies that are set by government or set by government institutions, because they have got interest with the money that is given to the needy. They want to come in and get some money. And you find that many organizations receive money and only maybe 5% go to the intended purpose because of the bureaucracy, and they say they are paying secretariat and what have you. And some of them have never gone on the ground. And when these people know what you are doing, they want to misuse you. They want to say, let us agree all what you do for us, and then we'll talk to the donors ourselves. I have seen situation like this, and I have always said I would rather keep my dignity, and you know, it's not for sale. Now I have to work with my hand so hard, because I need some money to keep my family, and I need something to keep the children going, and I need every day to go to office and do some plannings and speak to people. So I keep poultry, and I keep cows, and I keep pigs. And like cows, I wake up very early, and I start milking, and I feed the pig and the poultry, and then at 10 o'clock I go to the office. I work in the office in town, and then I would set to the field. I will either go to prison or either go to the field in Kibera and be with the children and see what is happening. And then in the evening I would come back to the office and stay up to 6. And 6 I would go for my coffee, still in town, and stay there until when there is no big traffic jam, because traffic jam is a real hassle in our country. I don't go all the time with the vehicle, because it is how much? It is €6, around €6 to put petrol into my vehicle to and fro. So I don't do that. That is very expensive. And unless there is something I'm carrying for the children and what have you. So I use the public means, and I have to wait up to 8 o'clock in the evening, 8:30, while I'm taking my coffee, so that there will be less jam. And then I go back home to start to prepare for another day.
That's a lot of work and long hours.
Long hours, really.
And you've got your own children. You have 4 children.
Yeah, I've got 4 children. My older boy is schooling in Kampala. I thank God because of him, because when he did his primary examination, somebody from TIAD said, I'll pay the fees for 1 year. And sure enough, he have done that.
Okay, excellent.
So the last money he gave this term, when I was coming to Geneva, he gave me also the money for the child. And then we wait for to see what will happen next year, whether somebody else will come and finance that.
Yeah.
And the others are with me in primary school. I've just spoken to the little one, and he was asking, Dad, when are you coming? Come with a bag and come with something from that phrase. It is wonderful.
Yeah,
they give me a lot of inspiration, and they believe in what I do.
I think as many people who are hearing about it definitely believe in what you're doing. Could you tell us a little bit then about your experience of now that you've come over to Europe for the first time? You've come to Geneva and you've seen how people live. Like, we've been walking around the streets of Geneva today, we've seen the richer parts, we've seen the poorer parts, we've seen different aspects of life in Europe. So could you just tell us about your impressions of Europe and how this world looks?
I think God intended me to be dumped by my host so that I can go into the social status here in Geneva and see for myself what, because I'm curious, I'm a person who want to learn. And when I went to the airport and I called my host, I was told he has gone to France. I did not know what to do, and I went to the police. I wanted them to call my embassy. Then while they were trying to call my embassy, Covell came over and he told me, forget about Milan. I'll guide you how to, you can go to Geneva and find a social place where you can sit and do what. I think it was in the plan, which I never knew. Because in such a situation, I have run more than I could have run when I was, in a friend house. Because maybe my calendar would have been controlled very, diary been controlled very much.
Yeah.
And I have also seen it's not what I had in mind when I was coming, because I thought it's a place of full civilization and no problems. But I've also seen people in the street begging. And I have also seen all kind of bad thing you can never think they only happen in Nairobi. And what I have also found is that youth are very, very hopeless. They don't have hope, and there is no linkage between the older people and the youth. Because maybe the older people never presented the gospel the way it should have been presented. And then the youth reacted by ignoring them and said, we have got nothing to do with them.
Mm.
And this did not solve their problem, because many of them have ended up being in dupe and what have you, and they are very desperate. And therefore the future of Europe is also in jeopardy, in great jeopardy, because we need people to receive the baton. We need people to hand over the baton and other people to receive the baton. But in terms of civilization, there isn't much is required from them, from the youth, because most of these buildings are viable up to now, because whoever did the planning did a good planning. He meant when he built a house, he meant that house can serve for many years, whereas it was not that way in my country. Mm-hmm. All the houses, many of them, 90% of them, the British did in Nairobi, today are condemned. They are not habitable for living. So they never had a posterity in their mind when they were developing, or what they were interested in was to get some resources and take them back to their country. So I have also felt in my heart, while we sincerely feel that we need them to come and aid us in Africa, I don't know maybe what Africa also need to come and do here, but yeah. I have seen the problem. Yeah. I've seen the problem. What I don't have is the solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just to, I suppose, come back at that, the argument you're making that all the youth are troubled and hopeless and lost and, you know, without hope and turning to drugs. Like, I think that would not be a full picture of all of the youth, because you know, that's just one group or one small part of the of the youth. There are many that are doing many projects all over the world that are doing many great things that are working for justice, that are highlighting injustice in other lands, that are doing things that are building global networks. Yeah. You know, that there's a lot of things. But it's true, there are elements that are getting lost and ending up on drugs and on the streets, and like, you only have to look around here and you see some people who are probably lying out after injecting heroin. So, but it's a problem. Those problems do exist in the West. They exist in the in the South and as well. But I suppose together, working with each other, listening to each other, and trying to make a better world together, that's the only thing that can.
You are very right. You are very right. And I also want to agree with you that there are also a big percentage of young people who are very dependable. You can depend on them, and they are very articulate about issues concerning life. And together, if there is a network, if there is a system that will bring the youth of the world together, as an organization without strings, because many of them, which I know, have got strings, and they mean the opposite.
Yeah.
If ever we'll ever get an organization without string that will bring the youth of the world together, bright idea will come over, and maybe one of the idea will be to restore Kibera to its to great height of dignity.
Which is, and it's like when you look at the code of human rights, you know, people have a right through the international law to homes, to access to medicines, to health, to education. These are all rights that are supposed to be enshrined for every single human being. Mm-hmm. But in Kibera, they're not getting those rights. Justice is not happening in Kibera.
Yeah.
And it's up to people like us to work to see that their rights are happen, you know.
I have said, being somebody who work in prisons, I have to acquaint myself with the law of the country, because most of the times I'm also in court and in government offices trying to fight for the basic rights of these people. Because one of the greatest problems we have in Africa, people don't know their civil rights and civil liberties. And we have started there is a big awareness, because last year I went around my country talking about civil rights and civil liberties, and people are beginning to understand that it is not a privilege for them to breathe good fresh air. Because in my country, even fresh air can be a privilege from the government.
True.
It's no longer a privilege, but they are right. They are God-given right that they are supposed to enjoy these things without anybody hindering them to do so. And I believe because of this awareness, there is quite a reawakening. You know, people are reawakening themselves, and they are coming together, and maybe in some times in future something good will happen also in Africa. There is quite a big awareness amongst the youth. Yeah.
Good, good. So just in finishing up here now, what would be your dream? What's the next part of this story for you?
My dream is, first of all, I want to do more than I'm doing to these children, because Tedda Faith only keep these children up to a certain period, and then we let them go to a destination we do not know, because we cannot give education for upper classes only on very special cases. We have got two or three children who have been with us up to class 8, that is about 13 years.
Yeah.
But their case was so desperate because their parents were in jail for life. And we felt if we let them go in the street and they were girls, it was not the best decision to have made for them. But I want to find some money, buy a property, a big property, whereby Tedda Faith can start from Tedda Faith and it go up to the universities, and we can set out workshops, rehabilitation workshops, where these people can I can tap their skill, because most people, even who goes to prison, they are trained, they are given skill, but the government does not develop this skill once they leave prison. They just wait for them to come back again in prison.
Yeah.
So the prison extension program want to tap the skill and develop them, so that these people can use the skill they have to earn a living. And of course, when they earn a living, they sleep when they are very tired and they have worked and they have got some money in their pocket, there will be no more alarm of insecurity, because they don't have more energy left to go and to commit any crime. That is my dream, and I believe with God's help it can be realized.
Okay. Yeah. And hopefully with the help of others who get to listen to this, they can do whatever they can to help in that dream become a reality.
I believe so.
So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.